Hi everyone, and welcome to this edition of the DWR podcast. My name is Simon Tappin. I'm the Clinical Director here at DWR Veterinary Specialists. And this week I'm here with Sarah Spalton, who's one of our internal medicine focused nurses.
Hi, it's great to be here.
Yeah, thank you for coming, Sarah. So today we're talking about endoscopy, and I know you spend quite a good amount of time with the medicine team assisting with endoscopy. So perhaps we could start off just talking about what endoscopy is.
Yeah, so endoscopy is a great tool to be able to do non-invasive diagnosis. It's a great diagnostic imaging tool because you obviously get real-time images of what is going on in the inside of our patients, and we pretty much do every kind of endoscopy here at DWR. So we do everything from the upper gastrointestinal tract, the lower intestinal tract. We do also do urinary tract, so cystoscopies, vaginoscopies, and then upper airway, so rhinoscopies, bronchoscopies. Pretty much you name it, we do it all here.
Yeah, perfect. So we're looking into a body cavity using an endoscope,
exactly.
I guess.
And exactly.
We have a fabulous set of endoscopes to be able to do that.
We do, yeah. We have a great range of scopes, so we've got a really good range of sizes, so we can scope all sizes of patients as well in a comfortable way for the patient as well as for the person doing the endoscopy, which is really really great to be able to do that.
Perfect. So I know we enjoy doing our screen. It's really useful for our patients. So you've mentioned a few of those sort of oscopies, which is the kind of use of the endoscope to do things, and quite a lot of sort of workups. So it's part of that workup. So looking in the gastrointestinal tract, for example, so down to the stomach, the small intestine, what would we use that for? How's it helpful?
So the main thing that we obviously see a lot of patients for is things like IBD, so the gastrointestinal disease. Obviously we get a lot of patients with diarrhea. It's a very generalized thing that you see most commonly probably in GP as well. And we tend to sort of see a lot of these patients for like the upper gastroscopy, so looking at the stomach, looking at the duodenum, small intestinal tract, to be able to see what irregularities are there, if there's inflammation there. We take some really tiny samples from these areas and send those off to our lab, who then can give us some sort of indication of what that patient's suffering from. Then we can treat that, confirm or deny whether we've got that IBD there, and then we can treat that patient appropriately and give that patient the best care we can.
Perfect. Yeah, so IBD, inflammatory bowel disease,
yes, exactly.
I guess, and we argue whether that's what it should be called, I guess, as medics, and chronic enteropathies and things. So inflammation, which is in the gut. So yeah, those little pinch biopsies from the surface, I guess, tell us that the inflammation is happening with the direct interaction with the stomach contents and the small intestine.
Exactly.
Yeah, perfect. I know we use the endoscopes for doing other more exciting things, like taking out foreign bodies and placing feeding tubes and stuff.
Yeah.
So what are the craziest foreign bodies we've taken out of patients?
Well, we have seen some really, really cool foreign bodies. Obviously not so great for the patient, but a really common one we get, which is always a fun and exciting one, is fish hooks in the esophagus. You know, dogs like that really tasty fishy hook, and they think that's a good idea to eat. So that's also a really nice one where we see a really great combined approach with our soft tissue team as well. When the scope isn't quite enough, they take the scope into theatre and the surgeons are working alongside them to get that fish hook out the best way possible for the patient, still while making it as minimally invasive as possible. Dogs do eat all manner of things, so corn on the cobs is always a great one in the summer. We get a lot of really great upper airway and lower airway foreign bodies as well. So at the end of the summer, you'll find that there's been a nice ear of wheat in a dog's lung for the last couple of months, and it's gotten really nice and stinky in there.
Yeah.
They're always very satisfying when we've managed to finally pull those out and send the patient home with the best possible outcome.
Yeah, it's always amazing what goes down into an airway and causes a bit of coughing, but then seems to sort of get stuck
it
and
really
not cause
is,
too much of an issue. And then, they become infected, and taking them out is always really satisfying.
Exactly.
So, it's always crazy to understand what patients eat. And so through the summer, I think we take quite a few fish hooks out.
A lot. Fish hooks, grass seeds, and bits of wheat and corn are all the sort of things you see a lot in the summer.
Yeah, socks and all sorts of other things.
Always a love sock.
Yeah, exactly. We mentioned feeding tubes as well, and we can use the endoscope to place feeding tubes.
Exactly. So we can do this in a manner of different ways. So the most common feeding tubes we use here are nasal gastric feeding tubes or nasal esophageal, depending on what your preference is, to go in the stomach or stay in the esophagus. We can do these without endoscopy, but if a patient's already undergoing endoscopy, it's much easier for us to then place the feeding tube and check with the scope alongside this procedure. We can also do the same with esophageal feeding tube, so place the tube, and if it's it's less invasive for the patient, they're already undergoing the upper gastroscopy, we can pop the scope in and check that placement alongside. One tube that we very, very rarely do here, but it's a very exciting event when it does happen, is the PEG tube. So they are the percutaneous endoscopic gastric tube. So it's one that I've probably only ever sat for once in my life, and it would be great to see one again. But it means that we don't have to send the patient to surgery to have a gastric tube placed. We can do it via the scope through a needle, and that's again reducing the invasiveness of the procedure for the patient, meaning that they don't have as much recovery from, say, a surgery, and there's not that wound healing time involved as well if a patient is really poorly from our common medical problems that mean that they do have less ability to heal their wounds. So it's just a really nice thing that we can do here.
Yeah, perfect. So we're placing a feeding tube in the stomach, so we've got sort of more longer term ability to feed that patient. They can go home with the tube in and be comfortable.
We love obviously placing, being able to place the NG tubes is a really quick and easy procedure, but being able to place the esophageal or the PEG tube means that the patient, even if they are well enough to go home but they're maybe not quite 100% not eating yet, the owners can take that patient home. They can be comfortable in their own home where they're in familiar surroundings, and it's better outcome for them because they're more likely to get better where they are comfortable and they're not feeling that stress, which then impacts their recovery.
Yeah, that sounds great. Perfect. So what's your role in terms of how we do endoscopy? So obviously the vets are doing the endoscopy. We do all of our endoscopies, I think, almost all the endoscopies under anaesthesia because we can't explain what we're doing. So is your role anaesthesia and organising the scopes?
So as an internal medicine nurse, I do a bit of both. So we'll be organising the day and making sure everything is booked in alongside our workflow team, alongside all the other imaging that patients might have. A lot of them will have CT prior to their endoscopy, and then we will be the ones setting up and preparing for the endoscopy, working up the patient's anaesthetic potentially, and then performing that anaesthetic and supporting them during the anaesthetic alongside the anaesthesia and the medicine team. We will usually have a nurse assisting the vets who are performing the scope, so helping them take endoscopic biopsies and then helping to recover the patient at the end before they go back to the wards post scope.
Perfect. So, and anaesthesia for endoscopy, are there many complications or problems?
There can be. So you have to bear in mind, obviously, whilst we're not doing a surgically invasive procedure, it's still, a lot of the procedures can still be quite uncomfortable because we're putting something in where there's not used to something being, and it can be quite uncomfortable for a patient. So whilst it's not necessarily cutting, it is still discomfort, and especially with something like a rhinoscopy, you find that patients do tend to react quite a lot to that procedure.
That's normally
quite a lot of the time it can be quite an involuntary reaction. They obviously you have something go up your nose, it's very tickly, very stimulating, and even an anaesthetic can't block out all of that sensations. So within the medicine team, since I've started, the nurses have started to do a lot of more of the maxillary nerve blocks in order to make that experience more comfortable for our patients. It's something that the nurses didn't really do before, and since I've started, I've tried to help us from my previous experiences doing the blocks. We've I've started to teach them to do that, so all of our nurses are able to do that now with the support of our anaesthetic team. So it's definitely a much better experience for the patients, and we definitely have much better experience with the patients not reacting as much, so it's really, really nice to see that transition, that progress with that procedure.
Wonderful. And we're talking about the endoscopy being a bit uncomfortable whilst we're doing it, which is why we're anaesthetising the patients, but they generally recover quite well and aren't uncomfortable afterwards.
Yeah, absolutely. Most of our patients will go home the same day after endoscopy. The exceptions from that will be the really sick patients or patients undergoing bronchoscopies, because they are a bit more invasive, and because they tend to already have that lung disease already, they are already a little bit compromised, and when we do things like a bronchoalveolar lavage, we're putting fluid into the lungs, so we are compromising their lungs a little bit more. It is obviously minor because we're only putting a tiny bit of fluid in, but we're still obviously conscious that there are potential complications with that procedure, like a pneumothorax is always a potential because we are again putting something in a lung. So we like to watch those ones a bit more closely. For recovery, we like to recover our patients to the point that they are extubated within the endoscopy room, and with bronchoscopies we will keep an extra eye on their saturations before we return them to wards. If there's any concerns about their saturations, we will send them to the ICU for closer monitoring and for oxygen flow by just while they're in recovery period. But after that short period of time, if the patient wasn't particularly sick beforehand, they do tend to recover really nicely, and they can usually go home the following day if they're existing condition isn't severe.
Yeah, perfect. And then we've got results back usually from washes and can start treatment
exactly,
and things.
Yeah, exactly.
Perfect. Fabulous. And then obviously after we've done the procedure, there's always tidying up, which is vets
exactly.
We've always disappeared by that point. So looking after our endoscopes, is there anything specific we need to do?
Yeah, so people are always so scared of endoscopes, and because they are this big, expensive, scary bit of kit that isn't used very often by most people, especially in GP practices, and they're really not something to be that scared of. They are fairly robust. Like if you see what the vets do with these scopes, shoving them into holes, pushing them in there, then you can see that they are very resilient. You obviously do have to take care with them and handle them and hold them in a way that you're not going to cause damage to them, but they are very resilient pieces of equipment, and we do have a specific protocol for cleaning of our scopes. The vets are in charge of making sure the suction is done at the end of a gastroscopy to get rid of any disgusting stomach fluids or anything from the other end, and then we will come along. We have to do a pressure test to make sure there are no problems with the scope before we start cleaning it, and then we do a disinfection protocol. So it means that it's quite a quick disinfection protocol we use because of the products that we have found that work. So it is a 10-minute clean, which is really nice for us because it means we can do a lot more scopes in a day and turn things around quite quickly. But it is a step-by-step process that we make sure all of our nurses are trained to do, and our student nurses, a lot of them are brilliant at doing that as well and just cracking on. Our scopes, We do look after them, but we do like to make sure people aren't scared of them.
I think they're great. We have a veterinary range of scopes. We have different scopes for different things, don't we? And you mentioned air and suction. Why is that important? What does that do?
So suctioning a scope at the end of procedure, obviously when we're putting a scope into a stomach, there's usually a lot of gross material in there, and then colonoscopies even more so. There's a lot of gross material that will get stuck in that channel, and that channel is really important for being able to obviously pop our biopsy and grabbing forceps down, and obviously we don't want things to get in. It's a very, very long channel. They're about 1.8 meters long, the longest scope we have, so it's a long channel for things to get stuck in, and we don't want to pass that to the next patient. We don't want the next patient to have to experience the previous patient's bodily fluids. So suctioning the scope through with some clean water afterwards really helps the cleaning process and makes sure that we can't have clean water go through the scope at the end, and makes that cleaning process much quicker.
Yeah, and for more sterile areas like the airway, then we would actually formally sterilise the scope.
Exactly, so we have been, fantastically have access to ethylene oxide sterilizer, so when we can, we do sterilize our bronchial scopes for within that ethylene oxide, so then they are completely sterile for the procedure, so that we're not contaminating our wash samples and we're not bringing anything nasty into the lungs that the patient obviously doesn't want to have. So we do try and keep those procedures as sterile as possible. And when we don't have access to the ethylene oxide, sort of a last minute emergency bronchoscopy, we will cold sterilize the scope beforehand. So we have a procedure where the nurses will cold sterilize the scope, and then we handle the scope with sterile gloves on. So our nurses are all trained again to open glove and handle equipment sterilely as well.
Awesome, thank you. Well, I've really enjoyed talking to you about endoscopy, Sarah. Thank you very much for your time.
No problem at all.
Hope you enjoyed it as well.
Fantastic, thank you.
Perfect. So if you'd like to know more about DWR Veterinary Specialists, then head over to our website at www.dwr.vet or follow us on social media and look out for the hashtag #ProudlyDWR, together creating a better world for pets.